Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
17 days into the Nancy Guthrie disappearance, investigators have no suspect in custody. They're supposedly building a case. It's going to be an interesting case. That a defense attorney will eventually have to tear apart if they find a living suspect. Evidence has been sent to a private Florida lab instead of the FBI at Quantico. The crime scene was released early enough for journalists to photograph blood on the porch and walk all along it, including pizza delivery people, the pool guy, a lawnscaper, and whoever else, you know, ordered DoorDash. And 16 gloves were collected in or around the home, 15 of them allegedly now discarded by the search team itself, because when an arrest finally comes, if an arrest finally comes, what will this case look like from the other side of the courtroom? That's something folks need to be thinking about. Defense attorney Bob Mata is with us, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. Always wonderful to have you here to get your legal mind on, this shit show. The Pima County Sheriff released Nancy Guthrie's home back to the family before the scene was fully secured. Journalists walked up and photographed. We now had the pool guy, the lawn guy, the pizza guy. There's been some others. I've lost track of who's just kind of trampled around the property. From a defense attorney standpoint, what does all of this mean to the integrity of the crime scene, and what could eventually be challenged should they ever get said bad guy?
Well, first of all, hey, Tony.
Hey.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, Bob.
Good to see you guys. It's the gift. It's the gift that keeps on giving. That's what
Jesus.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, the moment that a crime scene is released and unauthorized people have access, journalists, family, anyone really, the chain of custody for that entire location is absolutely compromised. There's no two ways about it, because you have unknown people who have walked through. Because remember, here, it's not just probably shitty processing on the front end and then release. It's shitty processing, release, re-grab the property, more shitty processing, release, re-grab. You know, I mean, this went on multiple times.
It's a circle of shit.
It is going to be an absolute issue at trial. Yeah. And it was like the same thing, you know, when we were anticipating that there was going to be a Koberger trial.
Yeah.
We'd always talk about it, like that compromised crime scene. For whatever reason, it took those kids to call, took until noon for them to call 911. Whatever the hell they were doing in that house did not help in terms of being able to collect evidence that hasn't been tainted or somehow compromised. So, you know, yeah, man, it is definitely going to be a thing. It's going to be a problem. You know, you have not only the potentially compromised evidence from within the house, outside the house, in the yard, wherever the case may be, objects were moved. The theory of things were being planted is going to be alive and well. I mean, all the things that defense lawyers can come up with in order to try to establish reasonable doubt will be brought up, and it's ripe for it because they made it that way, you know?
Yeah, and I would say even more ripe for it, every single day that we don't have anybody, and every single day that one investigative branch is saying this and it's contradicting them here, and one person speaking out over here. Feels like everybody's kind of on their own individual paths here on where this is going and what the official stance is and the word is on virtually every aspect of this case, which at the end of the day, if they get somebody, hopefully they get somebody. What you were saying earlier, the opportunity for things to be planted at a crime scene because we need to get somebody in custody because the world is staring at us going, we got to get somebody. We've certainly seen in other cases when that pressure exists, sometimes authorities, again, not saying this is happening here, but we've seen it in other cases where things do get planted to basically meet that public pressure to find the bad guy, trying to slam that square peg into the round hole. I'm not saying that's what's happening here, but we need to be vigilant on it at this point as to where this is going, who they find, when they find them, if they find anyone, and the dynamics of all of that, because all that's going to play into the defense.
Yeah, 100%, man. And it's the problem is that the investigation and the processing of the scene created this issue. And I don't know that it can be cured. I mean, right now, if you look at the status of the property, it's fucking wide open. I mean, like you said, I mean, the pool guys were over there yesterday. Like, nobody thought to cool off, like, call off the pool guys. Like, like the lawn guys are over there.
Like, why are they letting them on the property?
I don't know. This entire scene, and I'm talking not just the house itself, but for the neighbors, nobody should be allowed in and out of that cordoned off area that should be a much bigger circumference than just the house.
I mean, shouldn't there be some security or something just watching it because it is such a high profile case at this point?
I mean, Stacey, if there isn't, my fucking head's going to explode. I have to assume that the feds have some way to keep an eye on that house just to make sure if somebody happens to come back to that house for any reason, it would spark interest in their eyes in terms of like, okay, who the fuck is this guy and why is he here? Like, is this a possible clue?
The feds are there. I mean, the feds have other equipment standing by for their big photo op when that's ready to go, too.
And all the handshaking and patting on the back. And
so the resources are there. There's plenty of FBI agents that are there that aren't even doing anything at this moment because they haven't been called in for their roles to be played yet. So it's not like there's not people there. I guess, the simple question is, because everybody's like, why is the lawn people showing up? Why is it? Well, they're on a schedule. That's how those things work.
Right.
But okay, so I'm not surprised they showed up. They're just doing their job. But when they show up, why is no one telling the pool guy, crime scene, sorry, you can take us off your list at this point. You're not allowed to be here. Why is the pool guy able to go back and work the pool? Why is the lawn guy working the lawn? Why are they not just being turned away immediately going, you can't be here? And I guess, I mean, the other question, maybe, I don't know, if you are the lawn guy or the pool guy, why aren't you like stopping for a moment going, maybe I should call the owners or whoever's in control here. Do you really want me doing this today?
They might have no fucking clue.
Yeah.
Shouldn't somebody in the office that does the scheduling or sends people out for the day go, wait a minute, Nancy Guthrie? Didn't I hear that somewhere?
If it's that type of service, you know what I mean?
It's not their job to do it. And just like, it just feels like every single element of sensibility on everyone's part doesn't exist.
It's crazy. But like, to Stacey's point, I mean, there are individuals that have companies that don't have an office. You know, it's a story like, my lawn guys don't have an office. You know what I mean?
No.
If I don't like, and I don't, frankly, I don't even have their fucking phone number. So I couldn't
just keep showing up.
Catch them when they're mowing. Hey, hey,
here's your check.
That's it. Or, you know, there's the same with pool guys. Like pool guys, yes, it could be a bigger company or it could be a dude who does pools, Walter Matthau, you know, Bad News Bears style.
Why are they allowed on the prop?
I mean, it's great. It's like you said, that is a law enforcement exclusive problem, and it's inexplicable inexcusable. It's both of those things. And it's crazy, you know, and ultimately at the end of the day, when you kind of look at this case, and it's funny because we all sit here And we're like, oh my God, I've never fucking seen anything like this. This is fucking insane. This is crazy. But that's not true. Okay. Because the way that it goes, all we need to do is go back to the point before Kohlberger was arrested. We were saying the exact same shit about that investigation. We're all losing our fucking minds. The families, some of them were losing their minds. These fucking guys are incompetent. What are they doing? We need to hire real, you know, like Gabby Petito, same thing. Like every time we have this kind of period of time where the thing doesn't get solved and everybody starts micromanaging one another in terms of agencies and they're not playing well with one another and it kind of spills out into the public and we're watching, you know, things kind of unravel, or at least it seems from our perspective as the public, because the reality is we have no fucking idea what they're doing behind the scenes.
Sure.
In terms of the feds and Pima, I don't know how they're working together or how they're not working together. Well, I don't know. I mean, we're all seeing the same stories, you know, conflicting reports from fucking different people, and the feds just never say anything, which is what they do. The feds do not come out and update the public. That's not how they operate. Mm-hmm. That's cops, not federal agents. They just don't do that. When we hear from feds is when they make an arrest. That's when we hear from feds. So in terms of whether they're playing well with one another, I would hope so. You know, and I mean, obviously we see the Nano stories about 2016 where he's talking shit about the feds because they're investigating him and I don't trust him. So, I mean, that has legs. I mean, that's not an irrelevant story. I mean, the guy probably does have some kind of feelings about the feds for fucking looking into him. So, you know, but is he able to put that aside and do what's best for the investigation? You would hope so. But, you know, then you get the Pima Union, the police union coming out with the 299-1. Like, no confidence.
I know. It's like it says something. Track records say something. I'm curious, Bob, what's your take from your perspective on the glove? I mean, I don't know which glove of the 16 we're talking about. We're talking about the one that was found 2 miles away from the home. And I've been trying to quantify why this glove is important. And the best that I can glean from any sort of reporting or any sort of statements made by authorities is this. I mean, and I'm just paraphrasing, but this is essentially what's been said, is that it's looks similar to the one in the videos.
I mean,
so does every latex glove.
Right?
Like, so are we, like, we're going, like, we're at 2 mile radius? How many latex gloves are we going to find on the ground if we truly canvass every inch of this community where there's also homeless and there's also drug use and there's also a lot of reasons and ways and places that people would use these latex gloves? And just because there is unidentified male DNA on it, this latex glove found 2 miles away, we somehow think it's going to be related to this case, but we've not tested it yet, so we don't really know. So how the hell are they coming to this conclusion already, that this is the A1 valuable piece of evidence, or is this all just a big fucking ruse?
I don't know, man. It's like, it depends on who you ask.
Yeah. Right?
And I'm waiting. I don't know what the over under is on minutes before somebody says nitrile gloves. I kept calling them latex gloves. No,
they're nitro gloves.
They're nitro.
Excuse me. Yep.
Whatever. You know, people that use them, I guess, care about that.
But, that's about it.
To your bigger point, that glove scares the shit out of me. Like if you're the dude who threw that fucking glove out of your window and you don't have a damn thing to do with this thing, and they somehow have decided that this is important to the Guthrie case and is connected for reasons unknown, and they get a DNA hit on it, and then you're hauled in and you have nothing to do with it, you're like, holy shit, man. Like, this is what happens when you, like, litter.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, this is like we could go down the Richard Allen track here pretty quick.
It's terrifying. It's terrifying. Yeah. It is, because it's 2 miles away from the scene. You know, it's kind of like, I mean, maybe it's slightly, I mean, not as many people smoke as they used to, right? Like back in the old days, you find a cigarette butt. It could be around a crime scene. It could be a very, very good clue, right? But like now, smoking's not quite as prevalent. And, you know, to me, it's a little stronger than finding a random cigarette butt like 2 miles away from the house and saying, okay, this thing, you know, it's like, oh, well, we saw a glove on the camera. So now every glove that we find within a 10-mile radius is potentially smoking gun evidence. That is a scary proposition.
It is.
Well, it is. I mean, I'm... I go for walks. It's been a little while. I need to go more. But when I lived out in the country not that long, I go for walks all the time out in the country. And it was you know, plots of land. It was kind of, I guess, in my part of the country, it was similar to Guthrie. There's big houses around, but everybody kind of has their area. Yep. And then there's road, and you walk around. And even you go for a walk, you find weird shit on the side of the road. You're always like,
Like the random sock. Like, what's that?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And there's also, and I could, I mean, I've seen many of latex or what is it? Glove, the
nitro
gloves. You know, I've seen, I mean, I would take a while. I would bet if I were a betting person, if you said, Tony, go walk around a 2 mile radius of your home, I bet you can't find one latex glove. I'll bet you I'll come back with 10 in an hour.
Well, that's crazy. Why are there so many gloves?
To Allison last night.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to go because we're, you know, same. Like we've got big, you know, like big lots around here.
Yeah.
Lots of like little forest preserve areas. I'll find you want a fucking toe with little green nail polish on it? I'll get you a toe. You know what I mean? It's like that. It's that shit. It's exactly that kind of situation. And here, the problem is that we know that the first responders and the people that were processing the scene were taking their gloves off and just tossing them in the fucking yard, like to, to the tune of like 15 of them. Like, we know that exists in the world, that was part of this investigation. You can't trust a glove that you find 2 miles away, man. So whether or not, you know, Enten interviewed somebody yesterday, a guy that works for Pima, and he's not like, I think he was a sergeant. And this guy's like, I don't know, man. Is it smoke and mirrors? Is it a wild goose chase? Maybe. I don't know. You know what I mean? At least that guy's being honest.
Yeah.
The potential weight of that particular piece of evidence. But I don't think that the case is going to hinge on that particular glove.
I'm not understanding why there's this weight on this glove.
It's for lack of evidence that we're aware of. You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of that comes from the public. I think a lot of it is trying to address the public speculation about this glove that was. I mean, it was literally. I remember when the story popped up. There's a fucking black glove. You know, 2 miles away from the house, and then that became a thing.
Yeah.
You know, and then like the feds are like, all right, well, let's go collect it, you know, or Pima, whoever it was. And then you had the pissing match about what lab they were going to send it to, you know, and it's like, it can't hinge on that. I mean, to me, and I don't know if we're getting to this, but I think where this investigation gets solved is where they are able to finally, and I saw you did a short on a T and it was exactly right. Like, get all of the Walmarts, the Targets, every place that sells those, because those aren't specific to just Walmart. I've bought that.
Well, the backpack is a Walmart specific. The other items are not. But they do sell some of them there. So
I'm saying is you do
look everywhere. Yeah.
You go to every big box store in the area and say, I need you to go through your system and find out if anybody bought two of these items at the same time. And if
or the same day purchase at different stores, line it up, cross that. When you can cross that, when you can get a receipt, when you can find these items being purchased in somewhat sequential order, hopefully maybe from the same receipt at the same store or maybe different places. Then you go back, then you can look at the cameras in that store, figure out who bought it, get a shot. Okay, there's at least a person of interest. Then if you can cross-reference the cell tower ping with said person, and if that person is pinging over there, then you have a suspect.
And you got a suspect.
I would hope what the first thing that they would have done is that you send out preservation letters to all of them, like the feds. You got to go into every big box store around the entire general region, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I'd probably go out 20 miles and be like, look, pain in the ass, but we need you to preserve all your video. I don't know if you overwrite after a certain point. We need everything preserved. Mm-hmm. Because what we don't need them is trying to do whatever they did with Ring in terms of the Nest.
Recovering, deleted,
Like, so you put it out there to all the big box stores. Mm-hmm. You are preserving all of your video for the last, we're going to go back, as far as you can before it's been overwritten. So whatever date that is, as far back as you go, we need you to preserve it from that point moving forward, because we're going to need to look at it. Because that ultimately, to me, is what is going to solve this case. It's going to be that exact thing, because that's how they'll narrow it down. But those three steps that you just talked about are exactly how they land on the suspect.
And it's scary. It's like, okay, we're saying this out loud. I mean, we can't be the only ones knowing this or thinking this. This is just common sense shit. But I'm scared sometimes because it's like, oh, we didn't do that yet. In some cases, it's like, now is a good as time as any. If that's not been done, but I would imagine. I mean, I guess. And here's the thing: behind the scenes, like you said, we don't know what's going on. Maybe they do. Maybe they already got a recognition. Maybe they already know who this guy is. In Koberger, when Fry was up there at the podium saying, we have no persons of interest, we have nothing, the feds were already following Koberger. Yep. They already knew who he was.
Right. Right.
So what's happening public facing versus what's happening behind the curtain sometimes is something good. It's not always something bad that's going on behind the curtain. But the problem is the people that are walking out in front of the curtain, who just came from behind the curtain, are contradicting shit, and they have a track record of no faith.
Right.
So that makes us go, I don't know that I trust what's going on behind the curtain, especially when they drop 16 gloves as they walk out from behind the curtain.
Right. And look, man, that's exactly right. And ultimately, I think the rule of thumb moving forward with respect to anything that we're hearing is, if it's not coming from the feds, ignore it. Because, I mean, what's evident with Pima is that you've got, those are the folks that are contradicting one another. Now, whoever these unnamed sources are that everybody claims that they have, and I trust them fucking implicitly, I would step in front of a bullet for this, whatever that shit is. Yeah. I don't know what agency those people are from, for these people that are getting this insider knowledge, but it doesn't help the case, because if you're asking a Fed, and a Fed is going to be honest with you about this type of investigation, and they're going to say, look, like, why in the world would we fucking say that we have a suspect to clue that person in? Like why would they ever do that? Like, that makes no sense. It's nonsensical for them to announce to the world, just because we want to know. The public wants to know. Fuck the public. We're trying to get a case solved here. We are of no consequence. Well, I'm sorry, as much as we want to know.
At the end of the day, there's a missing woman. Can we just freaking find her?
That's what it's about.
Can we find her too before we start telling him we're going to kill him?
That might
be a little, you know, when you're trying to draw somebody out saying, you're going to die.
Right. Death penalty.
Like, okay. And it's not that I'm opposed to it. Kill the fucker if he killed this woman in some sort of malice. But can we get him first? Can we draw them out before we start shooting the hole that he's in?
But and beyond that, it erases, if there exists any kind of motivation, like, as this continues to go on and the person or persons are like, fuck, man, this is like a nightmare. You know, Nancy sitting in some cabin, you know, up in the mountains somewhere. Like, they're like, this is fucking crazy. And like, what are we going to do? So if there was any kind of motivation to say, all right, like, we've got to like end this somehow. Let's tell them this is where Nancy is, then we're going to dip. Like, any motivation to do that has now been erased by the threat of death.
Exactly. It's another lever of this that didn't need to be pulled. Yep. And another example of how everyone is working against each other. Because here's the deal. Savannah's post, I'm 99% sure it was probably influenced by the behavioral analysis unit that said, here's what we got to do. Let's try and appeal to the humanity of this person. Because if this person is not a psychopath or a sociopath crazy killer that's out there doing this, if this is a B&E gone bad, and this is some moron who thought that the best path of action for life was to steal to provide for themselves and their family, there's probably some humanity there. They're very often they're thinking, but they're also not sociopathically evil either.
Right.
So if you can appeal to that humanity, which is what we've been talking about for 2 weeks now with Robin Drake, who was the head of the behavioral analysis program, is just that, appeal to the humanity of those around this person to influence them, to inspire them to do the right thing, to go, yeah, this is because they're probably sitting somewhere in horror going, oh my God, this was a B&E gone bad. I thought I was just dumping a body, and now you have the president of the U.S. saying they're going to kill you. That's quite a stretch, quite a change from like B&E gone bad to holy shit. If you can inspire that person to come out and do the right thing, or at the very least say where the fuck they dumped the body, that's what we're going for. That's what Savannah's videos are about. It's about inspiring that someone to come out, or someone to say, okay, enough is enough. I know the person who did this. I'm not going to let this family suffer. But that doesn't work when you threaten to kill them.
I know. What is Robin's take on, like, does that coded language is which, you know, how I would categorize it, you know, kind of the, does that
it's not
work?
Coded. It's not coded. It's just truly inspiring someone.
No, but like really, that's what they call it. It's like coded. It's not like it's a secret code, but it's like these words are being used, specific words are being used in order to trigger that emotion that you're talking about. Like, so
I don't know.
Does it ever work?
I'm not saying specific words. I'm just saying the messaging in general, the direction of it, of just, look, there's no
coded message to if they're watching, they're trying to use certain words and terms in order to emote or to cause some kind of emotion.
Yeah.
But what I'm asking
is
does that shit ever work? Like how many of these kidnappings and you know, they're not, at least in this country. I mean, obviously we go down to Mexico with the cartel shit. That's different.
Yeah.
But up here, I mean, like I'm trying to remember if I could think of anything where there was a major kidnapping where that kind of shit kind of worked and the person just felt bad. And I was like, okay.
Well, it's not necessarily just for that person. It's for those around that person that may know if they told somebody and inspiring them to come forward to.
Yeah,
to
that's
it. So it's kind of a blanket thing for that person or those around that are maybe not monsters. The worst they're doing is stealing from people, but at the end of the day, they're not murderers. And they don't want to be known as a murderer, and they don't want their family to think of them as a murderer. But and they also don't want to think of as some sort of a horrible, cowardice, you know, vile person that did this and is now going to go hide in a hole for the rest of their lives either. So it's kind of speaking to the ego of that individual. And again, just the humanity, assuming they're not sociopathic or psychopath, then you're dealing with someone who doesn't give a shit. But if you can reach that individual or someone immediately close around them and influence that way, that's the thought process. That's what Savannah was doing.
Yeah. That kind of dovetails into that conversation of what this was. What was the intent of this thing? It can only be a few things, right? It was either a burglary that went bad. It was a kidnapping that went bad. And when I say went bad in the sense that they kidnapped her and her failing health caused her to pass away, like right after they kidnapped her. And they're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
What do we do now? Or it was a kidnapping and she's still alive. Like to me, those seem to be the three possibilities to me. And I know it's coming out, you know, that some unnamed law enforcement sources are saying that it's a burglary gone bad. To me, that makes no fucking sense. Like, I don't look, and I did it a long time in terms of working with criminals and being on the criminal defense side of it. And yes, there are a vast majority of criminals are not smart. Mm-hmm. But in terms of thinking that if this was a burglary that went horribly, horribly wrong, that the best thing for you to do is to now take the deceased 84-year-old woman away from the property. And you've now created a much bigger issue for yourself, which is disposal of the body, which is really, really fucking hard to do. Like, I don't know what people think. Like, this is not TV.
Yeah.
We are out in a world in which there are cameras everywhere. There are people everywhere. I don't give a shit what time of night it is. When you've got a body that you have to dispose of, it's a major, major undertaking. So, you know, like to me, that doesn't really make sense. I think that they would have been better off just cleaning and leaving Nancy there if it had gone wrong inside during the burglary. Cause that's it's nonsensical. Like, why are you bringing the problem with you?
Well, right.
You know,
I agree to an extent, but it's also nonsensical if you're going to go and break into somebody's house or whatever the hell the intent was there and not prepare for a Ring doorbell that you're literally grabbing foliage to cover it with, which we discovered last week on the show together as that was dropping. Like, that to me just shows like stupidity. So, I mean, I don't know. I feel like it, like, moment of, oh my God, he's there for 40 minutes trying to figure out what the fuck to do. And if for some reason, like, you know, they scratched him, and if the person had any sense watched a episode of Dateline at some point in their life, they're probably aware that DNA would transfer under fingernails. And if Nancy then becomes the actual piece of evidence, the only piece of evidence that may reveal something about this person, Nancy becomes the piece that needs to disappear. And no, not easy to do, not intended, not part of the equation at all. The hope might have been that she just sleeps through the whole thing and never realizes anything was stolen until she wakes up. But you're sitting there, you're freaking out. It's not part of the equation. Oh my God, what do I do? I've never done a thing like this. Maybe the best thing is to take the body. They're not thinking of that because they have no reps. They're thinking that might be the easiest path.
Well, they're going to discover in very short order. That was the wrong thing.
I think they've already discovered that. Yeah.
But
I
mean, we're 17 days in, you guys. Why haven't they been discovered yet? Why hasn't her body been found? Why hasn't somebody seen something?
Well, here's the bigger question to me, Stace, is if we have the Nest camera footage from prior to, where the fuck, why haven't they recovered the shit? Did he take it off? Like I know that he removed it at some point, right?
The timeline still doesn't make sense to me.
The timeline is so fucked in this case. I don't understand it. And the problem is that we see no timestamps on any of those videos.
On anything,
You know, well, so I don't know what's what, when that's from. I'm assuming it's from when they get there or he gets there. Yeah, the whole thing is just... It's just mad.
And Stacey, I mean, I think the answer to the question, why haven't we found her? Because the Arizona desert is vast.
It is huge. Huge.
And I think...
I was telling Allie last night, like, Allie asked the same thing as Stacey did. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I'm like, have you ever seen, even though it was New Mexico, but have you ever seen Breaking Bad? That desert.
It's not like they were in an area... I mean, I suppose any place you could find, you know, convenient places to drop a body, but it's not like they weren't in like one of the most opportune areas to find a hide a body, you know, if that's the direction that they went.
Well, somebody was telling me that there's a huge amount of abandoned mines out there. A huge amount of abandoned mines. Like, if you have anybody that's like at all familiar with the area, you know, I mean, like it's a scary proposition. It's starting to feel like, if God forbid Nancy's not alive and the hope is to recover her remains, that it's going to have to be that they catch the guy and the guy fesses it up, because to me, it just seems like such a needle in a haystack because of the terrain in the surrounding area. It's just, I don't know, man.
And that's where it's at. Your thoughts in the comments section, leave them there on Substack or on YouTube. Links are in the descriptions. Let's move over to another story. It's been 3 months now since Anna Kempner's death on the Carnival Horizon, and the first federal court appearance for her 16-year-old stepbrother, sealed juvenile proceedings. No publicly confirmed charges as of yet. A suspect released to guardian custody, while the victim's family says they're living with unanswered questions. Bob Motta with us, defense attorney and host of the podcast Defense Diaries, to help us break down where this is going. And it's more confusing and there's less information because there's a juvenile involved. The stepbrother appeared in federal court on February 6th, 3 months now, like we said, after the actual death. They are sealed, charges sealed, walked out to a probation office for a pretrial release. Bob, from a defense perspective, walk us through what likely happened in that courtroom. What does the sealed federal juvenile proceeding actually look like?
Well, I mean, the first thing that people need to understand is that federal juvenile proceedings and juvenile proceedings in general are a completely different world from what you are used to seeing on TV in terms of court, even adult federal court, because everything is sealed under the Federal Juvenile Delinquency Act and they don't play with it. It's like there's no public docket. There's no press in the courtroom and proceedings are closed. Like, if I'm in state court and I handled a fair amount of juvenile proceedings. Essentially, as the attorney, I would have to sit outside of the juvenile courtroom. They had a bailiff come out, and when your client was up, they'd holler to me, and then I'd be able to enter. They do one case at a time. No one else is allowed in that courtroom. It is, when I say sealed, it is truly, truly sealed. So what that means as far as the public, we're not going to know jack shit. What it means as far as the family, they're really not going to know anything either, because they're not going to be allowed in either. Like, now, sometimes on an initial date, the family would come in and they'd be there. But as it progressed through the proceeding, so whether or not the family was allowed in is still questionable to me, because there's these contradictions of what happened in there. It makes it seem like they were not. They sealed the family out as well. So, but it's we are not going to know anything about this case or any of the details of it at any point. I mean, they don't allow cameras as a general proposition in federal court, so that's never happening. We see it with all the huge cases that are going on in New York now. We saw it with Diddy, see it with the whatever those brothers are that are going on. Like, all these federal cases that are down in the Southern District in New York there, we don't know jack shit other than the people that go in and report for us and tell us what's happening, and that's the way it is. And that's adult court.
Could this be moved to an adult court at some point? Where we're at right now, these are just some of the initial proceedings. Could this be elevated to a federal charge or something else, where then he is then tried as an adult? Obviously, then we would know more.
I mean, they've
already done that by now.
Yeah, I think they would have made that decision already. I don't think it's pretty rare to see it happen after the fact, like after after things have started moving in terms of the process. I don't see, and usually it'll be in the opposite, wherein they may have charged them initially as an adult and then they thought better of it. And again, I'm talking about state more than feds. The feds move with purpose, you know, so the likelihood of it in terms of the feds moving forward on it, they're not going to switch up their course at any point. Typically they go into things with great deliberation, and you know, they're usually ready on a rock solid case by the time they make arrests. So I don't anticipate that it'll move to adult court at any point.
Okay. What kind of reasoning goes into deciding whether or not they're going to try someone as a juvenile versus an adult in something like this? I mean, mechanical asphyxiation is how she died. He was 16 at the time. She was 18. I mean, so many cases. I mean, we've seen cases far younger than that where they tried them in as an adult. Who makes that determination and why?
Prosecutors do. You know, ultimately, it's the prosecutors. Now, and it depends on jurisdiction. You know, like if you're between state and federal is one thing, but if you're talking about, like, I'm covering the Colin Gray trial right now. And the child, the shooter, Colt, you know, who shot up the school, Appalachie High School, killed the two kids and the two teachers and injured nine others. They're trying him as an adult. Now, in the state of Georgia, they have what has been the nickname for it is the Seven Deadly Sins Law. And that essentially says between a certain age range, and I think it's 14 to 17, if you commit any of these enumerated crimes, and murder obviously being one of them, you are automatically tried as an adult. Mm-hmm. There is no discretion from the judge in terms of how they're going to be tried. But like, ultimately at the end of the day, if you're going to try to get in there, I mean, it's really going to lay in the hands of the judge, though. So, like, I mean, the state or the feds can come in and say, we want to try him as such, but there's going to have to be some input from the judge in terms of how it's going to land, you know. And the federal system is just a different beast, you know, because they can transfer a juvenile to adult proceedings depending on the age of the kid. And, you know, at that point, the judge is going to have to consider various factors, like under that Juvenile Delinquency Act, which would include some of the stuff that we've been talking about, but like the age and the social background of the kid, nature of the alleged offenses, and then, you know, the extent of prior delinquent behavior, you know, so if the kid's got a past, and the intellectual development, which is such a slippery slope for me, you know, and as well as the psychological maturity of the kid, it's like, how much do we really know, like, about the human mind as it is? You know what I'm saying? It's like you have somebody, some psychiatrist or psychologist going in and evaluating, and they're coming back with, like, you know, this kid is, you know, emotionally stunted and intellectually stunted. But, you know, I mean, how much trust, like, for me? Well, you know, and it's like, this is what my feeling is in general with every, in my partner and my, you know, wife, Allie, we're both of the same mindset. The human mind is not developed. Until your 20s. Like, I don't think anybody under the age of 18, and I realize 18 is an arbitrary number in terms of what they consider to be an adult. And that was just at some point in time, somebody's like, okay, 18's an adult. You know, that was just somebody decided that. Like, but the reality is that the mind is not completely formed. That's like, that is science. And I don't think that any child, because of that fact, should be tried as an adult. That's not to say that they shouldn't be held accountable for their acts, but it has to be considered heavily in mitigation in terms of what they're going to decide to do with that kid. Ultimately, like, all over this country for decades, it was, they could try kids that were under the age of 18 as adults in, you know, some of these more horrific crimes, typically murder crimes. They try the kid as an adult, and they were giving kids life without the possibility of parole sentences, which got overturned by the Supreme Court. And now it's got to be, like, I mean, the states are starting to tailor to what the opinion was on that. But it's just a difficult thing, man.
Yeah.
There are
some factors here in this case that I'm sure are going to be brought up. The stepbrother had allegedly, things that were revealed in the civil court for the custody dispute, so we know all this about the case. He had been diagnosed allegedly with ADHD, was on medication for insomnia, which he reportedly hadn't taken for two nights, the insomnia meds, on the night of the cruise, including the night before Anna's body was found. So if you're building a defense here, you know, the ADHD or the insomnia meds, I don't know what the med was, but we've seen cases on insomnia meds before that, like, that can make you do some crazy shit. In fact, look at their side effects. It's a list of crazy shit.
Yep. You know?
I mean, it's like, this may cause this or that. I mean, could that factor in to support a diminished capacity argument or something of that nature? I don't know if diminished capacity would be the argument, or something else in relation to, for example, the insomnia meds.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, I mean, there's, in terms of trying to, again, that really falls into mitigation more than anything else, you know, in terms of, was this kid, did he have his full faculties in terms of, was he on these meds? How were they affecting him? But it's like, I was reading through the comments, and it's like, I love it, because this is a perfect example of what society is. I always consider our chat to be
a miniature
jury box.
It is like a jury.
You know, so you've got people that are saying, okay, put somebody in a chokehold. So creative chaosify says, okay, putting someone in a chokehold for several minutes doesn't fall under underdeveloped mind behavior. And I would call bullshit on that. What does that?
What does that even mean?
What are you saying, that you have to have a developed mind to throw somebody in a chokehold? I reject that one, you know, completely. But then, you know, you've got the.
I would say it falls under an underdeveloped mind. Falls under underdeveloped mind. I think that's part of your argument, that it's a very like Neanderthalic type behavior of an underdeveloped mind.
I would say that of anybody who snuffs out another life, that you are underdeveloped. You haven't gotten to the point where you can look at somebody as an entity that needs to survive.
Yeah, 100%. And I would go so far as to say, look, if you look at not only the mode in which the kid killed her, but you look at the circumstances, he's on a fucking cruise ship. Okay. Like there is no hiding how there is no, like, unless you dump her over the side and be like, she disappeared. You know, like the fact that he didn't do that and to put her under the bed, you know, to me speaks volumes. But
that shows underdeveloped mind to me, too.
It does.
I mean, it's like whatever happened in the heat of the moment and in the decisions that were made after that fact, thinking like, you know, I'm going to put the tag on the door. The cleaning people, they don't need to come in here ever. Like,
underdeveloped mind.
Yeah, underdeveloped. It screams it to me. So, yeah, I mean, how that thing's going to shake out. But again, like as far as the feds go, and because of the fact that it's on a cruise ship, the jurisdiction is, you know, I think it's going to stay with the feds. I don't see it moving because we talked about it early, kind of like trying to figure out, you know, where this would land in terms of jurisdiction because it was out to sea. Yeah. You know, but I think it's going to stick with the feds, and I think they're going to stick with them as a juvenile. You know what I mean? But still, like all these things that we're talking about are still completely relevant to what is going to happen with that particular case. And it's, you know, it's a weird one. And it's going to be one that we're really not going to get much information on until, you know, there's an end result.
Yeah. It'll be fascinating to see how that plays out. Your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube and Substack. The links are in the descriptions. Be sure to press subscribe. And also be sure to check out Bob's podcast, Defense Diaries, as well. Let's touch on another case here that is about to be going to trial February 23rd. The curtains rise on the Corey Richen Show as your feature presentation. And the defense attorneys face an uphill battle here. But they've got some ammo. A key witness has recanted. Evidence of alleged abuse was excluded. No fentanyl was ever found in the home. And there's a lot. There's also Corey's internet search history, comments that he made, her text she made, her text messages. None of it works out really well in her favor over there. But there's two sides to every story, and you got to argue both. Defense attorney Bob Mata, host of the podcast Defense Diaries, is with us. Big thing on this case that the defense has been pointing to as we're leading up to trial is the relationship of how Eric got the fentanyl in his system. Yes. It starts back, way back, with Robert Crozer. He's a man, prosecutors say, supplied the fentanyl to Corey's housekeeper, who then allegedly gave the fentanyl to Corey in October of 25. Crozer recanted how he what he sold. He claims it was oxy, not fentanyl.
Oh, because that's so different.
Yeah, well, it is in toxicology.
I mean, it is, yeah, yes, I mean, but...
But and the problem too is it's street, and with street, almost all oxy at the time, the sources say also had fentanyl in it. So there's that problem too. So saying that he was detoxing and out of it during the original 23 statement, the judge denied bail, saying a jury could credit either version. So this is kind of a, you know, it's a bit of a wart on the case. His original testimony says, yes, I did. Now, no, I didn't. It was oxy. He does say he sold something. So it's not like a complete nothing burger here. Bob, where do you think this lands?
Yeah, I mean, frankly, if you're the defense, the recantation is the biggest development in the case for them. You know, them. I mean, like you said, at least it gives them a little bit of ammo, but you have to handle it with like surgical precision. You know what I mean? You can't go in and just kind of bat that thing around. And this is the way I'd see it playing out is, you know, I as a defense attorney, I don't necessarily need the jury to believe Crozer. I need the jury to not know which version of Crozer to believe. You know, that's reasonable doubt in its purest form. So, you know, because like in 2023, when he says he sells the fentanyl, you know, and then in 2025 says it's oxy and that he's detoxing and he's out of it. Can't trust anything that I said back then. You know, I've had these witnesses on the stand in terms of, you know, like meth addicts saying, I know what I said back then, but you can't trust that shit.
It's not a great witness for either side, really, you know, but it is something for the defense.
Yeah.
And so put an ice on that and put some sprinkles on it and make it look a hell of a lot better than it actually is.
And it is because, I mean, when you think about the prosecutor's entire chain in terms of how the fentanyl ends up in Corey's hands. It is supplier to housekeeper to Corey, right? Mm-hmm. And that depends on fentanyl being the substance that was sold. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's what they have him dying from. If Crozier is now saying it was Oxy, then the prosecution's theory of how Corey got the fentanyl falls apart. You know, because, like, remember, in theory, Tony, we're not talking about a jury that knows everything about the fucking case. Like, so mm-hmm. everything that was found admissible. And I happen to love that judge on that case.
Yeah.
I think he is an incredible judge. So well-read. He understands the law. And he has been very even-handed in his rulings in terms of what he's kept in and what he's kept out. And ultimately, you know, the defense, though, if they lean too heavy on Crozier, the prosecution will argue that he recanted because he was pressured, mm-hmm. because he wanted to minimize his own involvement. Or, you know, because he's an unreliable person, one of the two. And ultimately, they're going to say to the jury, look, you don't need to believe, you know, you don't need to believe Crozier at all. The fentanyl in Eric Richards' body speaks for itself. You got it somehow. So, because then what is she having to lean on? The walk the dog letter, you know, where she fucking spells it out, you know, like, oh, well, you know, he was getting from the farmhands. You know, he was this was his own shit, you know, and I had nothing to do with it. Yeah, how that's going to play out, it's going to be really interesting.
Bob, I want to ask you this question. This is there's obviously different ways of testing people for drug use. And obviously the fentanyl showed up in his system in toxicology. What about the hair? What about his hair follicles? Did anyone ever take a look at that? Could anybody go take a look at that? I know he hasn't been cremated. But here's why I ask. To show a pattern of illicit fentanyl use, if there is one, or if there is not one, because it could work either way for either side. If it shows, yes, he's, because this test should be able to show that. Yep. If there has been a lot of use over time, it would show, okay, he's a regular user of this. The likelihood that he overdosed himself goes way the hell up and is a boon to Corey Richens. Or it shows he's not a user at all. Because Corey's already, they're trying to get evidence in as evidence of bad behavior of, well, back in high school, he used some drugs. I mean, these are people in, I don't know their exact, they're 30s, I believe, or 40s. So it's like, yeah, we did a lot of things 20 years ago that we don't do today. So that's a pretty weak argument, but it could work either way. Is this a lever neither side wants to pull because nobody's sure of what it may reveal?
I mean, maybe. I mean, that's the best rationale as to why it hasn't been done.
Yeah, I mean, because I've heard nothing of it. It's not even like, I just like, did they think of it? Or is it like,
I mean, they had to have fucking thought of it, right?
There's so many things that come out here where like, oh, they didn't think of that.
Yeah. That seems insane, though, right? I mean, like, look, if I'm handling drug cases and my guy like got probation and he's got to go to probation, he's got to drop weekly or monthly or whatever the case may be, they're always doing urine analysis, right? They're doing urine test. For that purposes, in terms of probation situation, you know, testing the hairs is cost prohibitive for them. When you're trying to solve a murder, like, cost can't be.
Yeah.
Like, that is not the impediment. It's got to be something else, which leads me back to what you said. Is this a thing where one of those situations where neither side really wants to know what the answer is because it could fuck either one of them?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which, I mean,
this is showing rings on the tree, not just who pissed on the tree.
Exactly. You know?
Exactly.
And that pattern is what would really, I think, answer a lot here. I mean, it doesn't definitively show anything, but it would show a pattern of illicit drug use. And if he's not a regular illicit user of fentanyl, most people don't just like, hey, it's fentanyl day.
You know? Well, yeah, but, it's Saturday night. I'm really looking for something to do. Let's go find some fentanyl.
We're going to talk with some fentanyl night, big fentanyl night. You know,
Also, I mean, going back to the Crozier saying, I was selling Oxy. Well, does it really matter what he even said he was selling or what he thought he was selling or what he did sell or didn't sell when the reality of the situation is so much of this shit on the street is laced with fentanyl? You don't know what he's not sitting there like in the fucking lab in his house, like breaking it down, going, oh shit, there's a percentage of fentanyl in here.
I mean,
he's selling whatever shit he has.
Right.
So he doesn't know if it's laced with it. A crazy high high percentage is, and it's killing people everywhere. Yep. So the idea that he thought he sold Oxy or even did sell Oxy, and then maybe the maid or the housekeeper said, yeah, it's fentanyl, and Corey's too dumb to fucking know or care, and is like, put it in the Moscow Mule. End result is the same. It's just the semantics that of people arguing what they think they're getting and not getting. People think they're getting Oxy every day off the street and it's fentanyl and they die.
Right. And that, like, to me, that's on the state to go through his chain of supply. Like, because you don't know who he gets his shit from. And I'm talking about Crozier. Yeah. If Crozier gets his shit from a dude and that dude gets it from a dude and it's been stepped on by two different people making its way through the supply chain, you know, you would think that that would be a way for the state to go, all right, well, we're going to squeeze this guy to give up who his supplier is, you know, so that you can kind of follow it down the chain ultimately to where, say, you know, like they're having the conversation with whoever his guy is and they're saying, look, we're not trying to fuck with you. Like we got bigger fish to fry than you. We need to know, do you, when you're baking your shit up, you know, are you cutting it with fentanyl, you know, which is very, like you said, it's super common because it's cheap and you know, people feel it. You know, the problem is it's always dosage. That's what's killing people because it's very, you know, and these are just fucking like drug dealers, not science lab guys.
No.
So, you know, they're cooking this shit up and they're sending it out into the world and they've laced it with too much shit.
And you don't have portion control, basically, and that's what fucking kills people. Yeah, and they don't care. So yeah, I mean, it was street.
Like, you know what it does? It doesn't necessarily solve the case, but it for the defense, if it came back that there was a history that goes back a certain period of time, it certainly establishes some form of reasonable doubt.
If I were Corey,
their entire theory of the case, the state's.
If I were Corey and I knew my husband had been a regular user of this, I'd be fucking exhuming the body.
No doubt.
I mean, it'd be like, even if you did it, I'd be exhuming the body to put that piece of doubt in there. Obviously, it would have to be admitted at this point in time, but it would be, I don't know. I think it could tell a lot. But. But wait, there's more. Corey's search history. After Eric's death, that kind of tells another story. What if what is a lethal dose of fentanyl? Okay. I mean, I could see someone Googling that but if you were like, well, what curious? Yeah. If someone is poisoned, what does it go down on a death certificate as? Okay. A little more curious, but you're still trying to figure out how this works. Luxury prisons for the rich in America.
That's a problem.
How to permanently delete information from an iPhone remotely.
That's a problem.
Yeah, it gets a little dicey there. What's the defense play here on the text?
I mean, let's just be frank about it. Those text messages to me are the strongest evidence the state has. I mean, words are hard. Words are damaging, you know?
Yeah.
And didn't she text if he could just go away? I mean, it's not really a confession. As somebody who's going through a divorce myself, believe me, the shit I've said in text messages, you could hold up in a court of law, but my soon-to-be ex is still walking the face of the earth, so that doesn't make me a murderer.
Yeah, and there are some texts, and I don't have them directly in front of me, but you're exactly right, Stacey. There are some where it's, I wish, you know, it would be so great if, like, this could all go away, or he could go away. It doesn't say murder or anything like that, but then there's another one, and this is the more damning one, and I just did a piece on it this morning, but it's something to the effect of, by Friday, like all this will be gone.
Something
of significance will change. It's denoting a time period before something very dramatic happened. And that is the damning one.
Yeah.
Cause the other stuff, like the stuff post-death, you can contextualize, right? You can say, sure. Oh, you know, look, man, like her husband just died. She's in shock. She's getting calls from people that are saying that she fucking killed him. You know, unexpectedly, people are whispering about poison, all this shit. And the first thing that a lot of people would do in that situation be is like, well, what is a lethal dose of fentanyl? Or, oh my God, could someone have done something to my husband? Did I give him enough? You know, luxury prison shit could be like, She's hearing the news. She's terrified. So she's like, oh, well, you know, if I'm going to go to prison, what's the best one I could go to? You know, I mean, none of that is really going to work on a jury, but like, you got to try to do something to contextualize it. But
yeah,
like you said, the other ones, brutal.
I don't know. There's a lot of weird around this case, and weird doesn't always mean guilty. And this other piece that's now starting to come into play, again, doesn't mean guilty. What we're about to say here, this person was never charged with anything, and I'm not saying they had anything to do with this, but it's just documented history. Corey's mother, allegedly Lisa Darden, an unsealed search warrant revealed that Darden's romantic partner died of an oxy overdose in 2006.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Shortly after naming Darden as the beneficiary, the detective wrote, it's possible Darden was involved in planning Eric's death. Darden was present the night Eric died. No charges have been filed against her. She's innocent. She's not been charged. This is a little odd. I mean, when you're looking, I guess it's an odds game to me here. You know, obviously, in the world that we live in, we probably all know someone or know of someone, depending on how far out, that has died of an overdose of some sort. But to have two people this close to your degree of separation, a partner, and then the partner of your daughter, both dying of overdoses of illicit drugs. The odds are got to be a little high. Like, you don't have good odds of this being something that's going to happen to you in your lifetime, maybe even once and then twice. Again, not saying anything. I'm just saying it doesn't look very good. If that gets admitted in here, what's your take on that? And again, we're not saying she did anything, but it's just, it's like, oh.
Yeah. Like, you got to think, if you're defense counsel, you got to think long and hard how that thing plays out. Like, if they decide to make mom an alternate suspect.
Well, I mean, it doesn't make her an alternate suspect, or does it make her like an influencer of someone who may have said, you know, honey.
I'm going beyond that.
Yeah.
And I'm putting it on fucking mom. Like, I didn't do it. My fucking
mom. But she's good with mom. And mom is the person who she wrote the walk the dog letter to as well. So it's kind of like a, you know, again, it's fucking weird.
It's fucking weird. But I'm just saying, if they have the opportunity to point the finger at somebody else, and Corey's like, sorry, mom, you know, I mean, but that could absolutely, that's the fucking nuclear option, right? It just is. It's like, because that, like the people on the jury are going to be like, oh, this bitch, now she's throwing her mom under the bus. Well, really?
But like, Bob, I mean, could the prosecution use it not to say that, that mom is did it, but that
it's a this pattern
an influence as an influence, basically.
I mean,
what do I do, mom? I'm unhappy. Well, I saw this happen once
in family.
Yeah, I mean,
no, I can't see them being able to get that in.
No,
it's not gonna fall under 404B stuff.
No.
It's not her prior bad acts.
Like, so it would be the defense that would have to choose to bring it.
The defense would have to bring it in. It's like a third party culprit type deal, man, which
doesn't work.
Doesn't work. It'll like that would just explode in your face. The jury would be, because, you know, like, you're going to double that up with the book, the children's book about grieving your recently deceased parent. And then you're going to have her now pointing the finger at her own mother, saying, well, you know, my mom, yeah, this is kind of what she does.
And, you know, it's like
money and whatever. I don't know.
I think it's one of those things where the jury, after they render their verdict, goes back and reads the full context of the case. And they're like, holy shit. You know, and either that's a holy shit, like, oh, God, we made the right call, or holy shit, I wish we had more context.
Yeah. I mean, to me, like the probably the best play, if you're trying to figure out as the defense, because again, I don't see how the state would ever be able to get that in. But from the defense side of it, you know, you're not going in with the sledgehammer. You're going to try to go in with like a scalpel, and you're going to be like, look, okay, like I'm not going to point at my mother and say that she's the one who did it. But what I'm going to say is this investigation was incomplete, because the reality is that she has this history where there's some question of what may have happened here, and it seems problematic. And this, again, is the defense. And you're trying to sit there and you're saying, look, they didn't investigate that fact. And when you couple the fact that there's some kind of potential history attached with my mother to this type of thing happening, and the fact that my mother was at the house that night, mm-hmm. just really kind of shows you, can you trust the investigation? So you try to steer it less from pointing the finger at mom and more towards, okay, there were other possibilities here that mm-hmm. law enforcement just failed to look into. You know, I mean, like, that's the softest blow where maybe you're not getting the massive pushback that you would if you're just pointing the finger at mom and trying to throw her under the bus.
And there's a lot that can be argued over there. Her defense attorney has said that's a conspiracy, that there's no way that could be. And it's also been noted that her previous partner, the one who died of the OD, had been a user for a while. There was a quote from somebody that involved in this that allegedly was saying that at the time of the death, though, they weren't in an active recovery state. And that could also be taken two different ways, too. So it's a big if. The proximity is what makes it weird to me. The odds of this being that someone is that close, just they're not good. But people win the lottery, too. You know, it's things, odds do happen in different situations.
Yeah.
So many questions. We'll be covering the case here on the channel, and we'll be giving you live courtroom coverage on the podcast. And of course, updates throughout the week. Are you guys covering it over there in Defense Diaries, Bob?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. See, my problem is we're doing this Colin Gray trial, which is going to butt up against it, because that's a very, very important case. Like, when you kind of like sent me what we were going to chat about, I'm going to put that on the list for next week. Cause
okay.
The end result of that, if they find this father guilty of second degree murder, is historic in the sense that it's never been done in this country. The Crumbleys got nailed with, you know, the involuntary mm-hmm. manslaughter, but this is different.
And I saw your tweet about that yesterday, and my thought was, okay, how is this different than the Crumbleys? And that's a good question, and I think a lot of people are wondering that, so we'll talk about that next week.
Cool.
When you're on. But Defense Diaries, go check it out. Podcast, wherever you get podcasts, YouTube, go press subscribe right now to Defense Diaries and check that out. Give us your thoughts on this case in the comments section on YouTube or on Substack. The links are in the description. We'll continue our conversation there. Until next time, for Todd, for Stacy, for Bob, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something. But this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery. But we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.
Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, Lady Luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack, craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just $10.
$10 for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.